Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
February 27th, 2019. My apologies for being away from you for a couple of days this week. I've been fighting something off this entire week, but you all know I can't stay away from you for longer than 24 hours. There's far too much going on, but there's definitely a lot to get into today from just U.S. foreign policy outside of the sphere of what's the current breaking news in regard to Afghanistan, with apparently civilian deaths being higher than ever, as well as U.S.-backed terrorists, al-Qaeda groups in Syria are now apparently stronger than ever as well. We have Yemen increase in civilian deaths all around the world. The U.S. foreign policy carrying out massive, unprecedented civilian deaths, but those aren't the ones we're supposed to be talking about. As well as probably one of the biggest stories today in regard to the Golan Heights and more U.S. new congressional action towards anything that's good for Israel, apparently, as our Congress has shown us, now are going to be trying to recognize Israel's claim to the Golan Heights, an area that they're illegally occupying, as the international community has roundly acknowledged. But first, one more follow-up story to what's happening in Venezuela in regard to the coverage over the last couple of days. A lot of catch-up for today in general, but let's start with this first story before we get into all of the other news. This one coming from RT, very important in regard to the story we've been covering over the last couple of days, entitled Aid Trucks Carry Nails and Wire for Barricades, according to Venezuelan's foreign minister, and has photos and everything to show you. Now, this shouldn't be very surprising, as Russia has repeatedly come out and said, this is about to happen, and then it ends up happening. And they just either just ignore this from the Western media or pretend that Russia orchestrated the whole thing, and that's how they knew. Even though over and over and over we get examples of exactly the fact that this is U.S. foreign policy, as it's always been, on repeat, over and over, and Russia just sees what's going on and points it out. And in this case, they've been calling this a humanitarian aid show, which it very clearly is, as our last couple of shows have very clearly showed. But now even one step further, they look inside these trucks that their own people burned down on the Colombian side of the border, both of which the mainstream media is continuing to lie about. It turns out, guess what? They've got barricade material, wires and nails for the opposition. This is what they talk about when they say politicizing humanitarian aid, which is exactly why the United Nations and the Red Cross and numerous other organizations have refused to work with the United States in this. But as always, the mainstream media simply will not tell you that. You can look it up on Red Cross's website right now. But why they don't tell you is something you should ask yourself, as well as impersonating Red Cross during the whole thing to pretend like they're legitimate, on and on. But guess what? Now it turns out they had wires and nails and things inside of these. So addressing the UN Security Council, which just took place, Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Araiza said trucks supposedly carrying humanitarian supplies to Venezuela were loaded with nails and wire, and showing you the images that you could just see. And here's just a close-up shot of it, of what we're talking about. Now, of course, you know, could this image be fake? Of course. Could Russia be lying? Of course. But how many times are you going to continue to ignore, for those that are doing so, evidence being presented that could be fake versus the other side simply saying, that's not true, here's what's the truth, trust us, which is what this always comes down to. You can question whether one side is giving you the honest facts, but the evidence they're showing, but when the other side has nothing but just trust what I'm saying from career liars, there's a problem there, as I continue to point out, but people just do, because Russia bad guy, Venezuela bad guy, U.S. good guy, and that's all. There's no logic involved, and this is what they're constantly trying to get you to do. But as always, I've shown you the evidence from the Russian side countless times turning out to be correct. It's about time we start listening. Now, the opposition-led and U.S.-backed operation to drive trucks with, quote, humanitarian aid. Thank you for the super chat. Talking about, yes, the Pakistan and India. Unfortunately, I pushed that story till tomorrow. I've been investigating that over the last couple of days while I've been fighting off my illness. But yes, the super chat on the screen, as you can see, is asking about that. We will be talking about that more tomorrow, which I'll touch on at the end, just because I know that's an important story, but I wanted to make sure and follow up on some of the stuff that I missed while I've been fighting off this illness. But definitely we will be covering that tomorrow, because that is a huge story, and it actually relates to a lot of other things going on, including Israel. But again, I'll touch on that at the end. But the fake humanitarian aid over the Colombia-Venezuelan border led to violent scuffles, which saw many police officers injured and several trucks set afire, which, if you've been watching this channel, you're already aware of. Now, denouncing the botched delivery as a, quote, well-orchestrated operation to violate the territory of Venezuela, which I think we can all say very clearly was. Again, that saying that is a fact does not inherently mean I think Maduro's a good guy, or inherently mean that Venezuela doesn't have problems. Very different things. We can acknowledge that the U.S. is lying, cheating, stealing, and deceiving in this effort, and doesn't, without admitting that everything else is good on the other side. I would argue, actually, that it's much better than people think it is, but that's the point is you can say those two things and be in different topics and think both. Now, Arezia has been presenting this evidence in front of the United Nations, showing you exactly what actually happened, calling it a U.S.-led effort, a Trojan horse aimed at inciting a coup, which is very clear is what's happening. Now, Arezia said, showing the photos of what looked like piles of heavy wire lying in the ground, which you can see, quote, when the trucks were inspected, there was equipment for barricades. There were nails, wire, and so on and so forth, and this is what is used by the opposition in Venezuela. Big surprise. Now, Arezia said that Caracas also has video proof that can be viewed by all that is interested. Now, again, this is I'm assuming this is what we showed in yesterday's show or day before yesterday. The proof of showing them throwing the Molotov cocktail and making Molotov cocktails is pretty blatant proof. And understand that even with this information, the mainstream media still is telling you the other story and not showing you this, not explaining why this doesn't show what we say it does, just outright ignoring it, which is what they always do because they're trying to control your perception. Now, praising the Venezuelan army and police response to the attempt to smuggle the aid, the foreign minister said that it was the latest chapter of the coup, which has failed. And I do agree with that. It is utterly failed, regardless of what side you're taking. They're failing and trying to cultivate the perception that they're succeeding with this effort, very aggressively trying to do so. Now, Arezia said that Caracas is willing to actually sit down with whatever representative the opposition sends to sit down with the constitutional government of Venezuela, Maduro's government. And they said even including self-proclaimed U.S.-backed interim president Juan Guaido himself, showing that they've been willing to talk from the very beginning, and it's the U.S. side that is aggressively trying not to. Now, Caracas can only hope that handlers in Washington, and this is coming from them, which I found very humorous, actually, that they can only hope that the handlers in Washington will give Guaido their authorization to resolve the crisis through dialogue and negotiations. You know, the president that's supposed to be in charge, really showing you that it's just a U.S. puppet, as all of these things are, that they can't take action without checking with their puppet masters. Now, Arezia said Venezuela is open to mediation from Latin American countries, as well as from the EU, who has recently spoken out saying that they are completely against U.S. interventionism in Venezuela specifically, and looks forward to talks without an agenda. Now, the United Nations Security Council meeting on Tuesday was used by the United States, as usual, as an opportunity to call for more sanctions against Caracas. You know, sanctions that will hurt the people, but they're apparently trying to help the people by hurting the people, as well as drum up support for its rhetoric of regime change, which is always its effort. Now, speaking at the meeting, the U.S. Special Envoy for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, you know, convicted war criminal who in the 1980s was also involved in shipping weapons to Nicaragua under the guise of humanitarian aid, which he's admitted to. He himself called on the United Nations Security Council member states, quote, to consider what resources and tools they have to contribute to Venezuelan's democracy and, quote, pressure the Maduro regime to peacefully step down. Now, amid speculation that Venezuela's neighboring states, notably Colombia, can serve as a springboard for invasion, Russian United Nations Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia called on, quote, all states in the region, regardless of political affiliations, to reject threat and use of force. They actually said, quote, are you truly so naive, speaking to the United States, or Abrams specifically, are you truly so naive? Do you really believe that you are immune to this, that you will not be next? Or rather, speaking after Abrams, but to everybody else involved in Latin America, saying, are you really that naive to think that you won't be next in line on a U.S. regime change? And he's right to say that. Historically, I believe at least that we can verify at least 56 different regime change and illegal coups in Latin America since the United States has been in power. I mean, think about that. And as you can see by most of these countries, it's left them in a worse state than they could be if left to their own devices. Now, the Russian diplomat said this, calling the proposed new sanctions an attempt to, quote, bring Venezuela down to the state of destitution to trigger a humanitarian intervention. Very clearly what we've seen happen over and over. Now, Foreign Minister Jorge Arezia said, or rather made a really excellent point during this meeting with the UN, one which all too often gets completely ignored in lieu of the current propaganda, regardless of how many times these past interventions have failed. The point being, all of them, if you care to do your research, have all failed. His point was a historical example. Back in 1965, in the Dominican Republic, which has been a victim of U.S. regime change more than once, after the U.S. forced its humanitarian aid convoy into the country in 1965, right after that, 8,000 Marines followed in right behind it and overthrew the government. This is a historical precedent that the U.S. has used this tactic before in countless occasions, and we're just supposed to forget, or just, you know, today is just different somehow. But this is how naive they want you to be. And sadly, if we go down another 10 years down the line and we can't successfully stop them, I can promise you that Venezuela will be the next Libya. And they'll be doing the same thing with a new country and saying, trust us, this time is different. We have to help the people. Yeah, we failed in the past, but this time is different. They said the same about Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, all of them. Now, on that same note, and as Russia has been shown to be correct, and as I said, almost every one of its predictions about U.S. policy in the past, it's important to know what they are now saying about U.S. interventionist buildups on the Venezuelan border. This article coming from The Mind Unleashed, as always an excellent website that you should check out for yourself, as all of these, entitled U.S. Moving Troops for Military Invasion of Venezuela, Moscow Warns. Now, I prefaced this with that statement because people just reflexively think that if Russia says it, it must be fake, which is really, really ridiculous. And naive for people to think like that. They all lie, including the U.S., clearly the U.S. But the Moscow has been largely correct in regard to what it prophesizes about what the U.S. is trying to accomplish. Now, Russian Security Council Secretary Nikolai Patrushev, excuse me, probably hacking his name, told the media that the U.S. is deploying military assets to Puerto Rico and Colombia for a future military intervention in Venezuela to remove President Nicolas Maduro from power. Now, we can clearly see that this is what they're doing, right? But are they actually sending the troops? And I think that's it would, again, be naive of us to just reflexively say that's not happening. It's most likely happening because you can see that they've already said that the whole thing that they created on the 23rd and the 24th is now their justification for why intervention must happen. Right. They created the problem and then said, look at that problem. We need to go in and do something because of the problem we created. This is what they do every time. It's classic. But so now that troops are going there is very likely, I would say. He says, quote, showing sarcasm and arrogance towards the Venezuelan people, the United States is preparing a military invasion of an independent state. Now, according to his statements, Washington is transferring, quote, American special operations forces to Puerto Rico, the landing of the U.S. forces in Colombia, which, quote, clearly indicates that the Pentagon is reinforcing the grouping of troops in the region. Now, this could be propaganda, as all these groups put out propaganda, but the reality is we've seen this happen before, and to think that the U.S. isn't already building up troops in preparation for something they're already saying is likely is just ridiculous. Clearly, they're doing this. And so I think we need to be ready to stand against something like this, because even the large portion of the U.S., vast in regard to just U.S. interventionism, do not want this, but a lot of Congress doesn't want this, most Venezuelans don't want this. So why is this happening if nobody wants this? That's a question we need to be asking ourselves. Now, moving on to another story in regard to other foreign policy outside of Venezuela that shows you the absurd, the really upsetting, unsettling nature of how destructive and how violent and bloody U.S. foreign policy can be in other places, while they just don't ever talk about it. And they'll point to a place like what's happening in Venezuela, and pointing to Maduro as the bad guy, and ask yourself in regard to the numbers we see in Syria and Afghanistan, if what the civilians being killed due to U.S. foreign policy is even a fraction of what they claim is happening in Venezuela. Think about that. This one in regard to Afghanistan from anti-war. UN, according to the United Nations, record number of Afghan civilians killed in 2018. A record of all time of civilians being killed in Afghanistan as the U.S. is currently trying to end. So they're now killing more civilians than they ever have in the entire 18-year war as they're trying to end it and pull away without success, dealing with the very group they claimed was the reason that they had to be there to begin with. This is a catastrophe. They have wreaked havoc in this country and are now trying to pull away and leave it with some kind of air of success somehow. The numbers will blow you away. And again, think about if this many numbers were applied to what's happening in Venezuela. And the contrast that if any other country wanted to come out and say the U.S. is the leading world sponsor of terrorism and they're killing more civilians than any other country in the world, they would have a logical claim to say such a thing. And by all rights, what the U.S. is doing in Venezuela, they would have just as much legitimate right to say they need to overthrow the U.S. government because of what they're doing. But see, it only applies on one side of the argument. Now, according to the United Nations officials, in 2018, civilian death toll in Afghanistan was a record high, with 3,804 killed and another 7,189 wounded. Now, think of that. If over 10,000 people were suffering in Venezuela right now due to bombing campaigns, or if Venezuela was bombing another country and killed almost 4,000 people just in 1 year, what do you think would happen? What do you think would happen if any one of these other U.S. adversaries did this? It should show you the ridiculous hypocrisy. It has nothing to do with helping people. There's an agenda taking place here. And of course, this was approximately an 11% increase just over the last year. Of course, as they're trying to pull their way out, deaths are increasing. How does that work out? And this is actually the highest annual figure since the UN began keeping track in 2009. Now, the report concluded that a sharp increase in U.S. airstrikes was largely driving the record deaths. So basically, the U.S. bombing people is driving more deaths than civilian people. I think it's pretty easy to understand, with over 1,000 casualties just from U.S. air operations. Now, the UN said a particularly concerning fact was that the civilian casualties from U.S. airstrikes were overwhelmingly women and children. This, however, should be unsurprising, as the U.S. tends to kind of just define adult men in Afghanistan as suspects or militants simply by virtue of being in an area that they're airstriking. I'll let that absurd hypocrisy let your head spin for a minute. They just bomb an area. And if you're a male in an area that they just bombed, well, you're a militant because you were there. That's a fact. And ask yourself how this is okay while Maduro's the bad guy, while Assad's the bad guy, while the entire country of Yemen is being bombed and starved into an oblivion. And the U.S. in this is the good guy. Just think about the contradiction there. And ask yourself, after 18 years of an open-ended war against, who knows now, since they're dealing with the Taliban, it's pretty much against Iran and whoever else they're trying to point at today. Ask yourself why any of this is in the interest of Americans. I'll give you a secret. It's not. Now, moving on to another point of U.S. foreign policy, and also showing you another ridiculous concept of how the very people they're pretending to be fighting are now stronger than they were before. Al-Qaeda increases control over Syria's Idlib province. You know, the Idlib area that Russia and Syria have been trying to take back and have repeatedly been forced back by U.S. efforts, saying, well, if you bomb these people, we're going to attack you. If you dare to attack Al-Qaeda, that we still pretend is responsible for 9/11 and that we still use as an excuse to invade countries, if you bomb them, we'll protect them and we'll fight you back. It's laughable. This is like a comic strip. But they bank on the fact that you're not smart enough to look this stuff up for yourself. So late last year, Turkey-backed rebels, largely, again, this is the absurd concept of having all these different the U.S., Turkey, the Kurds, all these different groups fighting for what they claim is their legitimate area while they're all illegally occupying Syria. None of them are allowed to be there. But Turkey-backed rebels were decisively overwhelmed by Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front in the Idlib province. You could argue whether that was intentional or not or allowed to happen. This is in northern Syria. Now, while Turkey's allies made mention of resolving this as an attempt to prevent Syria attacking the area during a ceasefire with Turkey, Al-Qaeda never left the area. And their control has only massively grown since then, thanks to, again, the United States protecting this area while they were about to be taken out. So the Idlib province is now almost entirely under the control of Al-Qaeda. And they're ruling under an increasingly strict Islamist rule. It's funny how when the U.S. is the areas they're protecting, it gets more extremist and more in the direction they claim they're trying to fight against. But when Syria comes in and takes it back, it gets more open and people can be Christians again and everything goes back the way it was. So who's the bad guy here? Now, Al-Qaeda's activities are forcing a lot of aid groups to cease activity in this area. So the people that were there trying to help the few civilians that are suffering under it are now being pushed out because of this allowance of growth for Al-Qaeda. Now, and a lot of locals say that they object being ruled over by this kind of faction. Again, the faction that's allowed to rule when the U.S. is in control, or rather fighting back Syria from an area. Now, they say exactly who supports Al-Qaeda is never really clear, and so far there's no sign of any resistance. Meaning that no one is fighting against the Al-Qaeda groups. They pretend that they're there to fight in the beginning. How ridiculous is this? And we know who's been supporting them. Very clearly, we can see U.S. and Israel and Saudi Arabia all supporting these groups. It's very, very clear. But let's and this gets more interesting when you get into the idea of why some of these groups are here to begin with. We have evidence of Israel and the United States very clearly funding, arming, and protecting these groups. And there's reasons behind this. And here's just one of many reasons in a multifaceted agenda in regard to Syria. And again, it shows you what our own Congress in this country cares more about. American interests? No. About fixing our problems in this country? No. About doing things that support Israel. This coming from Ted Cruz's own page. Senator Cruz, Cotton, and Gallagher introduced resolution recognizing Israel's sovereignty over Golan Heights. So an area that they illegally occupied in 1967, and the entirety of the international community agree that they're illegally occupying this territory, and now they're passing a bill in our Congress, while there's so much going on that the only thing it does is allow Israel to have control of this territory, well, as well as giving U.S. deals within there to, you know, get in with the water and the oil and everything else in this area. But that's not what it's for, right? We're helping people. That's all we're doing. We're helping people around the world and then stealing the oil underneath it all. Because we're good guys, right? We need to get paid for our good guy efforts. That's what they want you to think. But this new bill recently introduced in the Senate, along with its companion bill in the House, would result in the United States government recognizing Israel's sovereignty over Syria's Golan Heights. Syria's Golan Heights. It's like a country that came in and just occupied Florida and fought it off for 20 years and finally just said, well, this is ours now because we've been here. I wonder how Trump would take that. But it's okay, right? Because Israel's on the good guy side. So that's always good when it's a good guy doing a good thing. But this is Syria's Golan Heights, which has been occupied by Israel illegally since 1967, when they illegally seized the territory from Syria during the Six-Day War, and has continued to occupy two-thirds of the strategically important territory ever since. Roundly acknowledged by the international community other than their allies. Now, the territory was later annexed in 1981, but the international community, including the United States, interestingly, has not officially recognized Israel's claim to the territory. But this is what this bill is about. So today introducing companion bills, U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton, Mike Gallagher, they are establishing that it shall be the policy on record of the United States to recognize Israel's sovereignty over this specific area, the Golan Heights. Now, the United States has committed for over 40 years to ensuring Israel's security from attacks emanating across the Golan Heights, they say. The threat Iran, of course, poses to America, and Israel requires acknowledging the reality of Israel's control over the territory as a matter of national security, they say. So now it's become national security for Americans, mind you, to fight anti-Semitism around the world, to make sure that Israel, it's a national security interest of Americans, to make sure that Israel protects itself in Syria against Iran. Think about what they're doing here. Well, the United States has no shortage of problems, and our Congress is repeatedly passing bills that have nothing in any way, shape, or form to do with what Americans actually care about. And not to mention the fact that you're passing a bill that allows a terrorist state to continue to illegally occupy another territory just because you're their ally. This is a criminal group that we're looking at here, people. This is unbelievable that the brazen nature with which they carry these things out, knowing that at the very least it's disputed. Now, the bill states in part that, quote, it is in the United States' national security interest to ensure that Israel retains control of the Golan Heights. National security. Ask yourself how that's even possible. And the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad faces diplomatic and geopolitical consequences for its killing of civilians, the ethnic cleansing of Arab Sunnis, and the use of weapons of mass destruction. So now this is all just lumped in there with their general, you know, it's the spin the wheel, you pick the explanation, right? Oh, it's fighting Iran. Oh, it's because Assad's a bad guy. Oh, it's because they're killing civilians. It's whatever you want. They just lump it all in and we're just going to take your territory while we're at it. And that makes us the good guys. So a great article, as always, coming from Whitney Webb that dives further into this discussion, always with great oversight of these the topics and the information in these. If you haven't checked out Whitney Webb's work personally, as well as on the Mint Press News, I recommend you do. Entitled, With Oil, Water, and Iran as Targets, U.S. on Brink of Recognizing Israeli Sovereignty Over the Golan Heights. So in addition to the recognition of the Golan Heights sovereignty, Israel's sovereignty over this area that they're illegally occupying, the bill would also, interestingly, promote the U.S. conducting, quote, joint projects with Israel in the Golan, including, quote, industrial research and development. So clearly, this deal benefits the oligarchs in oil production, in their industrial research and development, and all the things they're taking from this area. That is what matters. Again, showing you the real interest behind what this governs this country. Whether you're talking about profiteering or just control, it has nothing to do with helping people or what's morally correct. Now, this is sure to result in joint U.S.-Israeli efforts to extract the large oil reserves recently discovered in the Golan Heights, as the rights to extract that oil were granted to the joint U.S.-Israeli venture Genie Energy soon after its discovery was made public. Big surprise. Now, in 2015, a massive oil reserve was discovered in the Golan Heights and is estimated to contain billions, that's quote, billions of barrels of crude oil that could turn Israel, which currently imports a vast majority of its fuel, into a net oil exporter. Now, let's pretend for a second that we can't, I mean, let's not pretend for a second that we can't understand just how powerful a motivator that is to turn a country that is importing a vast majority of its fuel into one that no longer needs to and can sell a vast amount of the oil for profit. Yeah, that doesn't matter. That's not really important, right? It's about what's morally correct. We're helping people and fighting the bad Syrians. Does anybody really believe that? Of the areas that they're occupying? We're talking about the areas such as, you know, we're talking about obviously the Golan Heights, but the other areas that they're occupying in all these different parts of the world all just so happen to have massive amounts of oil and gold and resources. Come on, people. So soon after this was discovered, the Israeli government granted exclusive drilling rights to AFEC, an Israeli subsidiary of a New Jersey-based energy company, Genie Oil Limited. As Mint Press has previously reported, Genie Energy is backed by powerful interests in the United States, such as former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, former Vice President and Halliburton Executive Dick Cheney, and former CIA Director James Woolsey. You can't make it up. Powerful Zionist billionaires such as Austrian-born mega mogul Rupert Murdoch and England's Jacob Rothschild are also intricately connected to this company. Its Israeli subsidiary, AFEC, is run by a close friend of none other than Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, in addition to oil, as if that's if we need it anymore, the Golan Heights contains important freshwater resources, as it is one of the three sources of freshwater available to Israel. It is the largest in size and most abundant. Israel was recently going through one of the worst droughts in its history. So it's just perfectly makes sense that this is when they really need to make it important to legitimize their hold over this as they're suffering from a drought. But as Mint Press has noted in the past, the water resources of the Golan Heights are essential, not only to Israel's existence, but also to its expansionist ambitions. A fact that explains Israel's role in creating a plan in 2006 to engineer a, quote, civil war in Syria. Think about that for a minute. The reality that this was all engineered in order to gain access to this specific area, just like we're seeing in Venezuela, just like we're seeing in Iraq, saw in Iraq and Afghanistan, all these different areas. It's the same thing. Man, and this is on record. Creating this war to create the justification to go in and seize the assets that you want. This is classic imperialism. Just today, it's under a thin veneer of democracy. Now, last May, Israeli intelligence minister Israel Katz told Reuters specifically that Washington's endorsement of Israel's control of the Golan Heights was now, quote, topping the agenda in bilateral diplomatic talks between the two countries, and that such a move would likely come within a matter of months, though it apparently took a little bit longer. So interestingly, showing you yet again, you know, the very thing they got so upset about that Ilhan Omar had dared to speak out about Israeli influence in American policy. But here is Israel Katz literally saying just last year that this is what was going to happen because Israel's lobby is pushing American politicians to do it. And look at that. It turned out to happen. Is that coincidence or is this proof of Israel's influence over U.S. foreign policy? Now, Katz also had stated that U.S. recognition of the Golan Heights was being peddled to the Trump administration as a way to further counter Iran. How funny. The goal, and when we say peddled, it means they're manipulating him into thinking that this is what they're trying to do. They're selling him on this idea, just like they lied and sold him the idea of pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. Now, the goal has now become the guiding force between President Donald Trump's Middle East policy. Coincidence or examples of Israel's influence over foreign policy of the United States. Now, in addition, Katz had stated that bilateral discussions regarding U.S. recognition of the Golan had vastly expanded to involve various levels of U.S. administration, as well as several congressmen. So again, just laying it out there. We're influencing, meddling, manipulating members of Congress and the United States government. We are telling you this is what they're going to do next year, and now we see it happen. The effort, of course, to which the Katz alluded last year, this whole thing that we now see happen, appears to have massively paid off in the form of the recently introduced bills in both the Senate and the House. Now, the Senate bill was introduced by Ted Cruz, who is the top Republican recipient of pro-Israel lobby contributions in the United States Senate. And of course, then you've got Senator Tom Cotton, who is also heavily funded by the pro-Israel lobby. Coincidence or example of Israel's influence over U.S. foreign policy, or just U.S. policy for that matter. Now, indeed, Cotton received over $700,000 from the Emergency Committee for Israel in 2014 and nearly $1 million from the same group a year later. That's almost $2 million for Cotton over the process of 2 years. I wonder if that has any influence, you know, over his decision to pass a bill that legitimizes Israel's illegal claim on the Golan Heights. Maybe. Now, just as Katz has stated, the new bill frames U.S. recognition of the Golan as a means of countering Iran, as is the general kind of amalgamous claim today. Oh, we're just fighting Iran. We can do anything under the guise of fighting Iran because Iran's bad guy, so we can do anything, even though there's not a legitimate international justification to just say we don't like this person so we can do what we want. That's what they're doing now, under the claim of just fighting Iran. They said that the bill frames the U.S. recognition of the Golan as a means of countering Iran specifically, stating directly that the U.S. must recognize Israeli sovereignty over the area, quote, in light of new realities on the ground, including Iran's presence in Syria. So the presence of an ally in Syria, Iran, the presence of them being in an allied country is now the justification they think they need that legitimizes their effort to pass this bill in the U.S. Congress. Because, of course, if the U.S. supports it, then it basically trumps everything else going on because their military power can overtake basically anything, including all of the United Nations, which is what we see on a regular basis. They just put their thumb down and change what they want. But the reality is that this on the ground that they've created is now being used, as always, to justify their actions. They go in, they create a problem, they point to the problem and say, we need to fix that problem. They go in and they do what they were going to do, which doesn't ultimately fix the problem. How many times have we seen this happen? Now, the bills we're talking about, now it also notably states that it is in the, quote, national security interest of the United States that Israel consolidate its control over the territory, and further states that the push to recognize the Golan Heights as belonging to Israel is a diplomatic and geopolitical consequence of the Syrian government's alleged uses of weapons of mass destruction, alleged ethnic cleansing, and its killing of civilians. And as the author finishes, this basis for punishing Syria by weakening its claim to the Golan is dubious at best. Indeed, the Syrian government's alleged use of weapons of mass destruction, apparently a reference to chemical weapons, is a contested matter given the fact that many, if not every single one, of those alleged chemical weapons attacks were either staged or involved chemical weapons instead used by rebel groups backed by the United States and its regional allies, including Israel. Now, the United States has also repeatedly and illegally used a chemical weapon, white phosphorus, in its military operations in Syria and multiple locations around the world. But it doesn't matter because U.S. good guy. Now, in addition, the bill fails to note that the U.S. has killed scores of Syrian civilians in its military operations in Syria, including Raqqa, where civilian bodies are still being uncovered to this day, nearly 2 years later, after the U.S.-led liberation of that city. Another city liberated by the United States in complete ruin. Now, apparently only the Syrian government's civilian death toll has diplomatic and geopolitical consequences, right? It's the numbers, again, talking about even Afghanistan, 3,000 civilians. That's more than what we're talking about. They just don't care. If a U.S. ally does it, it does not factor into the equation. They kill one person and you're an adversary of the U.S. Oh my God, that's a humanitarian crisis. Now, furthermore, the latter point of Syrians' alleged ethnic cleansing of Arab Sunnis is sharply ironic, given Israel's ethnic cleansing of Palestine, most of whose inhabitants are also Arab Sunnis, as well as the fact that the U.S.-backed rebel groups ethnically cleansed large parts of Syria from religious minority groups such as Christians, as we continue to point out that the U.S. efforts around the world are hurting, by and large, Christians more so than anybody else. Doesn't really make sense for those supporting Israel and, you know, from the evangelical side of all of this. But the fact that Israel doing this as well as the U.S. is just not part of the discussion. Only what they do can be considered bad. They finishes by saying, thus, the justification for giving the Golan to Israel as a means of punishing Syria is just window dressing for Israeli government's push to consolidate its power over the territory with the help of its allies in the United States. Despite that, the bill has a good chance of passing the Senate, given that Chamber's recent and overwhelming bipartisan approval of the so-called anti-BDS bill that had been pushed by the pro-Israel lobby as a means of countering nonviolent efforts to protest Israel's inhumane occupation of Palestine. So now we have the anti-BDS bill. We have an anti-Semitism envoy or ambassador. We now have the U.S. passing a bill to recognize Israel's Golan Heights area. We also have bills in general about, say, the strengthening the Middle East bill, which is the anti-BDS bill they're talking about. All of these things. Think of how much has happened in our Congress since the new 116th Congress, and think of how much of that has to do with directly doing things that benefit Israel. And ask yourself who they're really working for. But I guess that's anti-Semitic to point out clear control of a lobby of U.S. policy. I guess so. But here's some related information to talk about the group that's you're not allowed to talk bad about. You can't talk bad about Israel lest you be an anti-Semite. Well, here's something Israel's doing. Burying nuclear waste in, guess where? Syria's Golan Heights. I wonder if this somehow plays a factor in this larger decision. What do you think? What do you ultimately think? Burying nuclear waste from a country that has yet to acknowledge that it actually has nuclear weapons, even though we all know that it does. Well, UN Chief Antonio Guterres has revealed a report which accuses Israel specifically of burying radioactive waste in the Golan Heights, a Syrian territory, which we just talked about, which is under occupation, illegal occupation for over five decades now. Now, Guterres will submit the report, which is based on serious charges against Israel, to the UN Human Rights Council at the panel's 40th session, which opened in Geneva Monday and will apparently run all the way through March 22nd. It says, quote, the Syrian Arab Republic noted that Israel continued to bury nuclear waste with radioactive content in 20 different areas populated by Syrian civilians of the occupied Syrian Golan, particularly in the vicinity of the Al-Sheikh Mountains. It says, quote, the practice has put the lives and health of Syrians in the occupied Syrian Golan in jeopardy and constituted a serious violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. But again, that stuff doesn't apply to the U.S. and its allies. Now, Israel is the only possessor of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, as we reported on countless times, that has a policy to neither confirm nor deny. They call it nuclear ambiguity. It's the only country in the world that's allowed to do so. Now, the regime is estimated to have 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, but is allowed to pretend like it doesn't. Now, the UN report further accuses Israel of, quote, providing logistical support to terrorist groups such as the Nusra Front, which is affiliated to Al-Qaeda. It says, quote, Israel, the report says, is providing terrorist groups with weapons, ammunition, money, and medical care to frighten the local population and to maintain a no-go zone along the Syrian border, which is the Israel has admitted to, interestingly enough. Very recently as much as giving them weapons and arms and medical treatment to the very terrorists the U.S. pretends to be fighting in Syria. But the Golan Heights area is completely under siege. The Druze population that lives there is constantly being bribed and manipulated and forced by Israel's government to come on their side and give them more legitimacy, showing you that even in their mind, they know that their claim isn't legitimate. So trying to manufacture that. But now we have them dumping and burying nuclear waste in an area that's not theirs. I mean, we're talking about unilateral airstrikes, illegal occupation, burying nuclear waste in this country. This is what you get away with when you're allied on this side of the argument. The axis of evil today, as it were. The groups we're talking about, the U.S., the Saudi Arabia, and Israel. The governments is what I'm talking about, not the countries. The governments that are using their people and their blind faith to carry out very, very bad. Some of the worst things happening today. Very clearly. But it's unbelievable to see this for me, that this continues to happen and nobody has the nerve to say anything about it. Just looking at the nuclear ambiguity of Israel shows you more than anything that they have a special circumstance when it comes to the United States. They get to do whatever they want with impunity. It's pretty damn obvious. Now on to the last topic of the day, coming from Yemen, something that I haven't covered as much lately because of everything else was going on, but it's still ongoing. It's still getting worse. U.S. and Saudis continue to bomb and murder and kill and starve to death every person in Yemen, and the mainstream media doesn't care. I wonder why. This entitled, Scores of Civilians Left Dead in Wake of Saudi Air Campaign on Yemen-Saudi Border. You know, this is the Saudi, the, you know, during the ceasefire, apparently, during the peace talks with Saudis and the Houthis, this is apparently what they do during their ceasefires. The Saudis continue to bomb people, as I've been saying for months, that no one talks about the fact that they just continue to bomb and bomb, while the Houthis have continually taken positive steps of trying to make this work over and over and over. Now, we've got scores of civilians. This is monumentally more than even the people they pretend are being hurt in Venezuela or wherever else. Showing you their one-sided coverage. They don't care if they can benefit from the story, the government will make sure that your lapdog mainstream media will report on it. But if it doesn't suit their agenda, they shut it down. Now, as the U.S.-backed war on Yemen continues to push the country deeper into the world's worst humanitarian crisis, by far. The world's worst, but they don't want you talking about it. Saudi Arabia has launched a vicious campaign to secure Jizan, its clearly vulnerable southern border region with Yemen. So this is where they connect. And clearly the Houthis have been making quite an effort to destabilize them on their side of the border. Now, Saudi ground forces, this is U.S.-backed Saudi ground forces, comprised of an array of local mercenaries and allied Salafi extremist groups, including Al-Qaeda, again, a group working with the U.S. coalition, Al-Qaeda, on the ground. But we're not supposed to talk about that. They still use Al-Qaeda as the bad guy when they want to invade other countries, but then they'll work with them where it suits their agenda. Funny how that works. But including Al-Qaeda, and equipped with the latest U.S.-supplied weapons, don't worry, have been fighting a fierce ground campaign to take the high ground on the Saudi-Yemeni border district that overlooks Hejaz's strategic city of Harad. Now, Harad lies near the Saudi border region that we're discussing. Now, on the outskirts of Harad, Saudi warplanes and Apache helicopters conducted airstrikes on the Kulan al-Sharif district, hitting a dozen targets, including the al-Suda school, and forcing hundreds of civilians to flee the area. So just bombing schools. Yeah, again, this is what the U.S.-backed coalition does, but the media won't talk about it. Now, scores of civilians were killed in the past week after Saudi Arabia launched a fresh round of airstrikes against the Saudi-Yemeni border region of Hejaz in northwestern Yemen. Now, most of the victims, including women and children, were from a single family that resided in the strategic Qushar Directorate, an area Saudi Arabia has been attempting to capture since last week. So it's happened constantly now where almost an entire family gets wiped off the map. And understand, these aren't militarized areas. We're talking about civilian areas that are being bombed. How is that okay? How has this become just the normal step of things that they can just bomb suburban areas and no one says, and it used to just be like, oh, it was a wayward missile. Oh, we had the information wrong. Now no one just comments at all. They just continue bombing civilians and food storage and water supplies. And yeah, no one cares because it was an accident, right? We were long past that. Whoops, we made a mistake. But no one cares anymore. The media won't talk about it. Hell, I can't even see the independent media talking about Yemen anymore. It's very frustrating to me that we can continue to wring our hands over Venezuela while the worst thing happening in the world today is completely shut down. I really don't know what anybody else would need to see to recognize that they're being lied to when this just doesn't even get talked about. But two civilians were also killed, in addition to that entire family, and a separate Saudi airstrike on Sunday that targeted, guess what, a rescue operation in the Al-Safiya district of Hejaz. Now, rescuers were attempting to recover victims from the rubble of a home that was leveled in previous airstrikes from the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition when Saudi jets returned and attacked the home a second time. This is what they call a double strike, which is a massive war crime. To swing back in and actually bomb the rescue workers trying to help the people that they just bombed. This is malicious, sinister, and the U.S. supports it. Now, that same day in Nim, which lies southeast of Hejaz, Saudi airstrikes targeted the home of Salih Mohammed Al-Tughi, killing three women and an elderly man. Another day in Yemen. Now, according to a statement given to the Mint Press News by a high-ranking military official in Yemen, the latest fighting has resulted in the deaths of actual British military personnel. British military personnel, which was actually confirmed on the ground by Hussein al-Bukhari. So now we're talking about, this is not the first time we've caught Western powers, including U.S. troops, on the ground in Yemen, but now we have proof that British members of the military are fighting alongside the Saudis in and currently involved in all of the massive human rights violations and international war crimes on the ground in Yemen. And again, this won't be discussed by the BBC or the mainstream media anywhere. Nine British military personnel were killed as a special operation on the ground. And they were, as he was saying, they were in the process of leading and carrying out attacks on Saudi soldiers and Yemeni fighters on Houthi-held positions during the ceasefire. while there's a ceasefire, we have British personnel fighting against the Houthis. I mean, this, you guys, how can people not see what's really happening here? It's staggering. They're continuing to do this. And this is an ongoing story. They're continuing to attack people. And this isn't even the only one. Hussein also sent this tweet out showing you that it says Saudi UAE opened fire on United Nations observer team after passing through last point in the Houthis controlled area. They were cleared the road and the team so they can go through to the Red Sea Mills, which is where they store all the food. As soon as they left the Houthi area, they came under fire from the coalition. Now ask yourself this simple question. If UN teams are even being fired upon by the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, why is that not being discussed in the United Nations? Does that not show you the clear bias in regard to the entire United Nations agenda there? It's just staggering. Hopefully people can take a step back and see what's really going on in this in the agenda, not just in Yemen, but all of the U.S. foreign policy. Hanov, this is not getting talked about. It throws everything else into question. Now, the ongoing Saudi-led military campaign against Yemen has resulted in the deaths of, as this one reporting group shows, 15,250 civilians, including 3,500 children and 2,200 women. That's according to the Legal Center for Rights and Development in Yemen, a non-governmental organization monitoring human rights violations immediately after their occurrence. Now, I've seen records of information up towards of over 100,000 deaths, and they vary. But the bottom line is, even this moderate, low-end acknowledgement of how many people have killed is way more than what they're claiming is happening in the groups they're trying to overthrow right now. Think about that. Now, these figures will likely increase as the result of the latest Saudi attacks on Hijaz. Other groups have put the civilian number killed at much, much higher than this. Now, moreover, 23,822 civilians, among them 3,526 children and 2,887 women, have sustained injuries and are suffering from a shortage of medical supplies and treatment resulting from a crippled Saudi land, air, and sea blockade. The center further noted that the Saudi-led coalition has caused the deaths of nearly 2,200 Yemenis from cholera. I mean, and this is moderate numbers is what we're talking about here. Again, even during this, they're willing to open fire on UN delegates, or rather not delegates, but just UN observers. It's unbelievable to me, and I really hope people are beginning to wake up to what's going on. So thank you for joining me today. I will be diving into the recent developments between India and Pakistan tomorrow, which I noted on earlier after the Super Chat, because it's a very big story. I've been really under the weather. I want to make sure I get out. This has been something that's been going on for a very, very long time, the standoff between India and Pakistan. And there's some information that ties it back to very interesting things here. It's very interesting to note that this topic in general, that India is actually against U.S. intervention in Venezuela, yet they're also the ones using Israeli-made bombs. So there's a lot of interesting stuff we'll get into more tomorrow, and we'll let that flesh out a little bit more. So make sure you tune back in tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow no matter what. I'm going to fight this off and stay here for you guys because there's far too much going on in the world to not be here to talk to you about. So I love you all. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to support this channel, you can do so in the links in the show notes. If you'd like to get a ping before every show, make sure you download the Wire app from wire.com and look up The Last American Vagabond, as you'll get a ping from me before every single show. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.